Hey there, and welcome to episode 5 of the Jiu-Jitsu Geeks podcast. I'm E.T., and I am with my co-host, Aaron.
Hey, guys.
And today, we have a return guest due to popular demand, Chris Mayhem. Chris,
how are you? Our email box is filled up with requests for Chris to come back.
We get a lot of spam.
I'm sure.
It has nothing to do with the fact he's our instructor and a convenient black belt to grab.
I know. Chris likes to talk, too. So it's cool that he's willing to talk to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. I had to clear my schedule for you guys today, but it's okay.
We appreciate it. So.
We just had an open mat, so we're all exhausted. So hopefully we're not going to ramble too much. Chris, how are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks Good. For asking. How about you guys?
I'm doing great.
Good. Yeah.
It's a beautiful Saturday here. Chris, I'm just going to bounce around a few topics with you. You know, you always have some interesting opinions because you've been around jiu-jitsu for so long. And something I thought about you yesterday, Chris, is like when you started, because you've been in the jiu-jitsu since the mid-90s, you are pretty much, I would say, one of the people who got into jiu-jitsu with only the Gracies. That's where the knowledge came from. Now you can just go on YouTube and you can see a million big-name instructors. But when you got into it, everything was coming down from the Gracies.
Yep.
So now, you know, stuff from me and Aaron, you know, we get a lot of stuff from Shanji and from, you know, anybody that doesn't have the Gracie name. But when it was you, you know, all your articles you had, all the books that you've written is all Gracie, Gracie, Gracie. I think you're still a bit, you're wearing a Gracie Jiu-Jitsu t-shirt now.
Yeah.
So you're one of the breed that really.
Oh, yeah. I still am a fan and still respect where it all came from. I'm
right.
Not one of those guys, you know, if you go on YouTube and look at videos and. You know, Gracie, early Gracie fights and Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and you see all these people that just have no idea or resent Jiu-Jitsu or whatever, that are bad-mouthing the Gracies. I mean, I still, you know, everybody, I think, owes a lot to those guys.
Right.
So I'm still a huge fan. I still like watching the old Gracie Jiu-Jitsu fights and techniques and, you know, and all of that stuff. But, you know, not just the Gracies. Even back then, there were people affiliated with the Gracies or associated with them that we got exposure to, you know, Pedro Sauer.
Matt Serra.
Jacare Cavalcanti was one of the first seminars I ever went to, besides the Hoist Gracie seminar, which was the first one
yeah.
I ever attended was with Hoist. But then Jacare and then a lot of Pedro Sauer stuff.
Was Jacare in Atlanta at that time?
I don't know for sure if he was in Atlanta, but the seminar that I went to was in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Okay.
So, and that was very cool. I mean, yeah, really good seminar.
That's when he was still competing over in Japan, probably every once in a while, right?
No, this is the guy that's the head of Alliance.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Hoist. I'm thinking of your Hoist.
No, Jacare Cavalcanti.
That's right. I know. I know.
Cabrina, you know, all right. These guys, the head of Alliance down in Atlanta now.
Yeah.
Yep. Fabio Gurgel.
Yeah.
Instructor.
Marcelo Garcia's teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a beast, man. I watched him his fights when he was competing, and gosh, that guy's so big, but so super technical, and he doesn't look like he's using any muscle, but yet he's, you know, you can tell he's so strong.
Yeah, I think he comes from, didn't he branch off from Holds Gracie when he passed away?
I'm not really sure.
I think so.
Oh, yeah, Jacare?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, he still talks about that a lot if you ever catch any interviews or articles, you know, in Gracie Mag or any other mags about, you know, his relationship with Holst Gracie.
Yeah.
You know, and
comes back to the point that it all stems from the Gracie somewhere, even Alliance.
Yeah.
It's probably one of their biggest competitors now is, you know, a very short walk back to a Gracie. So,
yeah.
Which we all have. So.
Yeah. Except the guys that come from Masvaldo. Fada.
That's true. That's
or Fada. Yeah.
That's true. But are there any U.S. schools with him? His lineage.
Yeah, I've seen some the Nouveau.
Oh, that's
you
know, right.
They're,
that's right.
They come from him.
That's right.
They've got a few
that.
Schools in the U.S.
So that'd be the biggest one from him, right? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Chris, let me ask you this: if you look back at the seminars you went to and the training you had back in the mid '90s and all the way probably to 2001, 2002, what were you learning? What were these guys teaching at levels? Where, you know, most of the guys that walked into these seminars, maybe they had a karate background, but they didn't have any jiu-jitsu. They came out of curiosity of jiu-jitsu. What were they teaching at these seminars?
Yeah, it was just really, really basic stuff. Like the very first Hoist seminar back in the 90s, it was like like I mentioned before, the first time we talked, the huge like ballroom auditorium of a hotel full of just basically all white belts. And, you know, we spent a lot of time like, okay, the guy throws the, you know, sucker rear, you know, hook punch at you and you close the distance, duck under, transition to the back, get the clinch with both hands, keep your head in the center, good base, you know, and just kind of did that over and over and over, slip the jab, close the distance and get your clinch and then the high clinch trip stuff and just basics, man. You know, nothing crazy, but back then it was awesome because no one really knew if you were doing it exactly the right way or...
Well, now these guys, they have to have a specific topic for their seminar. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, he's known for the 50-50 guard. Yeah. So he's got to... That's what he's going to be shown. Back then, it's going to be a very basic jiu-jitsu stuff shown.
And right? It was all core jiu-jitsu. It was, you know, a lot of the escaping headlocks, escaping guillotines, escaping... You know, scarf holds and side control, just all the core stuff that everybody needs to know is basically what it was.
That's cool.
You know? So it was good.
Chris, and you compete quite a bit in some big tournaments. When you compete, do you fall back to the basics or do you have to throw in some of the newer jiu-jitsu moves that have come along in the past decade? Because you're at a pretty high level. So do the basics still work for you or are you throwing in the...
Yeah, I'm just trying to survive, man. No, but you know what? I think if you watch any of these guys, unless there's the, you know, it's like the very top and certain folks are just known for that kind of really fluid, open, you know, high level type of guards, you know, open guards. It still comes down to the basics with even the high level guys. If you watch, I mean, it's still, you know, solid guard passing, solid side control, submissions from there, or mount.
Yeah.
You know, you still have to get to those basic positions to score on people. Right. And there's only so many ways to do it. But, you know, it is awesome to watch some of these guys and how fluid they are with their open guards and transitions and stuff. And I think you definitely have to train it. You definitely have to know it because if you're up against it and you've never seen it, you know, or you don't know how to shut down a De La Riva guard or reverse De La Riva or, you know, 50-50 and things like that, I mean, then you're just going to be in a lot of trouble. But when it comes down to it, you watch the high-level guys, they're all, I mean, that's what works. I mean, basic stuff that you've been doing since day one is just ingrained in you, so...
Yeah. That's been a topic that I've heard kind of come up at a couple jiu-jitsu podcasts, other podcasts. It's, you know, I've heard one with BJ Penn and Kurt Osiander, which is the one we linked on our website, the podcast with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what they talk about is, you know, it's there, but at the end of the day, I always go back to the basics. And Kurt didn't, in short order put that he doesn't even, you know, he thinks the basics will overcome all of that.
Yeah.
You know, if you try any of these... new guards or anything like that, he'll just, you know, take a basic passing and bow. But
I gotta tell you, like, on that topic, as we were just talking about this earlier before we started your podcast, is like I watched a lot of the Pan Ams this year that were posted online. Unfortunately, I had to watch them online. I didn't get to go this year. It's the first time in 6 years I haven't gone out there, but but anyway, you know, there were some guys that were just awesome to watch, and they were really, I was really glad to see a lot of guys going for the subs, you know, and finishing fights. But then, you know, there were some guys that would just come out and they would both sit down as soon as they touched each other. And, you know, a quarter, if not half of their matches were laying on their sides, entangled with their legs and holding each other's pants.
Right.
Until someone rocked up on top and then got 2 points.
Right.
And, you know, I can understand what a lot of people start to say, you know, in that kind of sports scenario where it's just, you know, that's really not what jiu-jitsu is supposed to look like, you know?
Yeah.
You know? But, man, it was awesome watching some of the guys like Rafa Mendez and Kron and Kyron and who else did really well this year? Andre Galvao, he always does well.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, just watching their styles, you know?
Well, how do you view jiu-jitsu tournaments these days, because you know you've been doing this for so long. I know that Elio Gracie always came out and kind of criticized all the weight classes and all the advantage for this and the stalling for that. And how do you view this? I mean, do you see it as a sport that's evolved and we should embrace the you know, the innovations, or do you see it as you want to kind of roll the clock back the way it was maybe 60 years ago, 75 years ago, where it was just self-defense? And, you know, it was just, more of a pure art. How do you see that? I mean, do you embrace the sport aspect?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really like it. I mean, I think it's important to compete. I mean, I don't think everyone has to compete if they really don't want to. But, you guys know from the school here, we encourage everybody to compete at least once or twice at each belt, you know?
Yep.
Some like to do it a lot more than others, and some are in it for different reasons. But, I think you get a lot of benefits out of competition. I really do. I mean,
right.
If nothing else, you kind of get to test yourself in as real of a situation as you can get under stress, under, anticipation of fighting somebody you've never trained with before, competed with before. And the thing is, these days, is like that makes it so much different is it's evolving towards even just jiu-jitsu, towards more professional athletics, you know. So you've got guys now that, like Hodger said in some of his interviews before, you're not going to be a world champion if you're not doing other things outside of just jiu-jitsu, like conditioning, lifting, sprint work, you know, a lot of cardio work, strength training stuff, and training like multiple times a day sometimes if you're trying to win the worlds, you know?
Right.
Where he mentioned, I don't know, I just saw that recently, some interview that he was doing or video, and he was talking about, you know, years ago when he was coming up that you could train once a day or, you know, and still have a normal job and everything, and you could be a world champion back in the day in Brazil. But now, you know, people are really serious about it. They use it as a stepping stone in MMA, and you've got to almost be a professional athlete to place at, like, the Pan Ams and the Worlds. And
yeah, you hear the top-level guys say that again and again now. It's amazing to me. They'll talk about – a lot of them will either say that, you know, their day consists – most days consist of at least Monday through Friday, it seems like, a morning training session. They'll take the afternoon off and rest and then come back in the evening and train again. Or some are strength and conditioning in the morning, a technique session at noon, rest in the afternoon, and come back and train in the evening, you know.
Right.
Two, three times a day. Five, and that's, you know, that's a professional athlete.
And, you know, and that makes it even more impressive when you see some of these little guys, man, that go in and, like, wipe, you know, these big guys out in a black belt or brown belt, you know, absolute division. I mean, because the skill level's, you know, pretty much the same. And they're all training like professional athletes.
Well, what do you think? Know? I guess this is for both of you guys. What do you think what it would take to get jiu-jitsu as a professional sport? Judo never quite got there, but if you look at jiu-jitsu's growth over the past just 5 years, it's grown so big.
Mm-hmm.
Tournaments constantly, guys that are making the leap into MMA because there's really not a lot of money in the sport jiu-jitsu world. Do you ever see it becoming a professional sport, or do you see it staying at the amateur level? And what could make it a professional sport?
I think to make it a professional sport, well, I mean, I thought about that a lot, and then jiu-jitsu in the Olympics also. I don't know. I don't want to touch on that, so I'll answer your question. to make it a professional sport, I think I've said it before, I think the closest thing we can look at is surfing. And my knowledge of surfing is very limited, especially at the competition. But I don't believe that if you win a big surfing tournament, you're done for the year. You've made your salary.
Right.
I don't know if that's true or not, but it, even if that is, there's not a whole lot of guys who are, you know, the fifth place guy isn't, I would doubt, is making his salary for the year. I think if you look at professional surfers, the majority of their money comes from sponsorships.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that is where jiu-jitsu would have to go.
You'd have to get something big behind it, a big name behind it.
But, you know, I mean, that it's different also because the problem is everyone likes the beach culture. You know, you wear a Quicksilver shirt, that just means you're down at, you know, the Outer Banks or something like that. And, you know, you're hanging out on the beach and you need swim trunks and stuff. I don't know that jiu-jitsu brands could do that, even though I'm a huge consumer of them. I love them. I train.
Yeah.
But it would have to get to the point where brand would be to the general population who didn't train jiu-jitsu.
Right.
To support the athletes.
It's a niche. It's a really big niche.
It's
kind of like bullfighting. Who would ever think bullfighting could be branded? Not bullfighting, bull riding.
Bull riding. Bull riding. I was
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bull riding. It's like, it's branded as like this, you know, alternative extreme sport now.
Yeah.
And it's got Coors and Red Bull and everything, but
it's on
still
TV
like an individual sport, and each ride lasts less than 8 seconds most of the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's got a huge kind of like cult following, but still, you don't really hear about it much.
But there's money in that.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, maybe if Nike or, you know, a big sponsor comes in, it would certainly help.
Right. I think Fila's been talking, you know, supporting the grappling world, but not so much jiu-jitsu specific.
No. And, you know, I don't know. It probably still...
Abu Dhabi is like the closest thing you really have. Yeah. The World Pro and the Nogi, you know.
And for sure the biggest guys make a living off. They compete. They win the Pan Ams. And then they have a tournament schedule. You know, they have a seminar.
Right.
That they make their money off. And then, of course, their school does better because they have a name. So,
well,
it's still just a few.
I'd like to see it happen because we have a lot of really top-level BJJ guys who I love watching compete. Mm-hmm. They go into MMA because they get to an age when they're like, it's do or die. I've got to make money.
Yep.
And the thing is, not too many of them become MMA champions. Maybe one or two. Mm-hmm. I know Jacare had a belt for a while. But they have kind of middle-of-the-road careers. And then you don't see them competing at the high-level jiu-jitsu where they're so talented and, you know, we all follow them. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, now they're fighting here and there and once in a while. You know, I hate that. I'd love to see money in jiu-jitsu to keep them in the sport, mm-hmm. you know.
Once they start dominating jiu-jitsu, they leave. I mean, Hodger, Jacare, as you said.
Andre Gavel.
Yeah.
Marcelo.
Chande.
Yeah. He's doing it. Yeah, he's now training for MMA maybe. So, and then the flip side of the coin is... I think there's some downsides if jiu-jitsu gets too big.
Right.
I hate to say that because I want to see guys make a living off of it. But at the same time, I think you look at the other martial arts, and ET, and Chris, you know, it's better than I do. But I think there's some really good stuff in traditional martial arts that have been lost because it had to water itself down to be, you know, to go to the general public.
Right.
You know, and I think judo guys say that also.
Oh, yeah.
You know, once it got to the Olympics, and it doesn't have a lot of traction, but it has more than jiu-jitsu, I think. And you know, it made the sport get watered down. So,
right.
Know, I think there's a downside to it also.
Yeah.
You know.
Time will tell, I guess.
Yeah. So it may just, you know, it may hit a peak and go backwards. I hope not. But.
Well, I think part of the problem, too, is, like, if you look at it from a martial arts and self-defense standpoint, mm-hmm. that jiu-jitsu is not meant to be just a sport. And that's where you get kind of lost if you start thinking of it as just a sport.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're right.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be about fighting and self-defense and,
good.
You know, that kind of stuff. And
good point.
It's just an aspect. The good thing, though, on the flip side, the good thing about that is jiu-jitsu has, like, those separate aspects, and if you can keep them quality and separate, then it's fine. You know, you've got the sport aspect, which is awesome because you get an outlet
right
outside of the academy. Then you've got self-defense, then you've got the MMA aspect of it, you know, then you've just got your fitness lifestyle aspect of it, you know, training in the school, and
and people say that, and that becomes an argument, you know, the one I just made about, you know, jiu-jitsu getting watered down. But at the same time, I've traveled not around, you know, I've trained at other schools, you know, particularly around Virginia and just here and there. And I feel that there are far more good jiu-jitsu schools than there are bad jiu-jitsu schools.
Oh, yeah.
The bad ones are known and called out quickly. I mean, there's an example kind of locally, and, you know, people figure it out. Mm-hmm, you know, right. they figure it out, and they don't train there anymore if they're watering it down. So, I hope, you know.
We police ourselves very, very, very well as a jiu-jitsu community with that.
Yeah.
You know, it's, somebody's going to call you on your BS marketing or whatever. You're going to be called out.
Yeah,
you know?
I think so. And that's a good part of it. Chris, you brought up a point I wanted to ask you this, because going back to that Kurt Ossiander podcast, he made a funny statement that goes against a lot of the big schools right now, especially Gracie Baja, saying, you know, jiu-jitsu is for everybody. I think that's her new tagline. Kurt said that jiu-jitsu isn't for everybody. What do you think about that? Is jiu-jitsu for everybody? Do we exclude people out? I have a thought on it, too.
That's a tough question, man. I've thought about
that
a lot, too.
It's funny. It was a fun. He, you know, he said it, and it was, you know. It was funny when he said it, but then you start to think about it. You know, is that true? And
I mean, I think it can be for anybody, and I know what they mean by that.
Yeah,
right.
I do too.
And it's good that they're trying to expose more people to it because it's going to be good for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, there's a self-weeding out process that happens in jiu-jitsu.
Exactly.
And the people that make it deserve to make it because they've worked hard, they've trained a lot. They improve, they push themselves, maybe they compete a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody is going to make it to purple, brown, black belt.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of other things just besides the actual jiu-jitsu aspect that get in the way too, you know, like the ability to be able to train, the ability to afford it, mm-hmm. time, yeah. you know, career gets in the way, all kinds of stuff. So you got to really, really want it, you know?
Yeah.
Right. You know? People just in this school, of people that have come in and trained and left, is only a few examples of people that had to leave because they could not do this. Most people I've seen put excuses that could easily be remedied if they really wanted to train. So I think jiu-jitsu can be for everybody. Yeah. Just like Chris is saying. So I agree with you. The people that say, oh, it's not for me, it's usually or something that if they wanted to make the time or wanted to put the effort in, they could easily.
Yeah, it's just, you know, just like Gustavo said to me before, you know, if you want it bad enough, you're going to do whatever you have to do to get it and make it happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. So, if you want to do it, you'll find a way.
Yeah.
I mean, I've thought about it with certain things in life. You know, what would happen if I couldn't make it here, couldn't make it there? And, you know, I'd figure something out.
Yeah.
If I couldn't make it in the evening, let's say, could I start a morning class? Or, you know, you'd figure something out
exactly.
to do jiu-jitsu.
Exactly.
But that being said, I agree. I think it is jiu-jitsu will weed out people. It'll weed out the folks who aren't committed to it. And they won't get very far.
Yeah.
They may get blue belt, but past that, I don't see it.
But you know, those reasons aside, if somebody comes in and they're just not, you know, as athletic or physically gifted as the guy who was a, you know, already a very good athlete and mm-hmm. catches on quickly and learns quickly
sure.
and drills well and, you know, mm-hmm. competes well, it's going to take that person longer that's not gifted, you
yes.
know, and maybe it's a little awkward and it takes them longer to learn technique. But if they stick with it long enough, do they
yes.
deserve to get, you know, their blue belt and their purple belt and their brown belt? I think they do, you know, but they still have to be able to
hold their own. I like the way you make eye contact with me when you keep saying that.
They still have to be able to hold their own against
yeah.
other folks and other belts. And, you know, they might not be the biggest, strongest person, in, you know, in your academy or whatever, or the most talented. But if they put in the time and the effort and dedication and they improve,
right.
then I think, you know, not everybody's going to be the best competitor in the world
yeah.
or the top guy in your school. There's definitely levels within the levels of belt, I think.
BJ so. Penn had a good quote about that in an interview that he did with Open Mat Radio. And he said that, you know, say he gives he has two purple belts and he gives one purple belt their brown belt. You know, congratulations. Or they earn their brown belt. Another guy comes up and says, what's the deal? I'm a purple belt. I can tap him. I beat him in class. And, you know, BJ said, well, he's a brown belt version of himself. You know, he's put in the time, he's put in the energy, and he's at that level for him. You, on the other hand, are a competitor. You compete, and, you know, you put in a lot, you know, you're more athletic, and I expect more of you. You know, I expect more of you for the brown belt.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, that makes sense.
You know,
yeah.
So, again, there's just levels within the belts.
Yes.
You know, that's true. I mean,
right.
you see that when you go to tournaments.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't competed at brown belt yet, but certainly at purple belt, there's guys I've competed against that, you know, I did pretty well, and other guys that have a purple belt around their waist, I'm just underneath.
Oh,
going,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Especially nowadays, you know,
yeah,
where you do
wow.
have younger guys that are really athletic, and they do have the ability to train
Whoa.
A few times a day.
Yeah.
Or a lot of times
yeah.
during the week, and they're young, and they're, you know, maybe they're in their teens and early 20s,
yep.
and they're still at home or in college,
mm-hmm.
and they've got time.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, they're making leaps and bounds technically, I think. You know, it's good to see, though.
It is.
That leads me to a question. In terms of progression in jiu-jitsu, what do you think is the mental key to progression in jiu-jitsu? I know time on the mat, everybody says time on the mat, and that's true. But I think you can probably spend a lot, some people can spend a lot of time on the mat and just kind of spin their wheels. What do you need mentally to really rise up to the blue, purple, brown? What do you need? What's that component that you need? And how do you develop it?
You have to not care about the belt.
That's one thing. I mean, you have to really not worry about something material.
And
I don't
mean not care. I mean, Chris, I just recently got my brown belt. And Chris, you know, when I got the brown belt, I mean, I was choked up and I was really happy and proud. But I didn't worry. I just trained jiu-jitsu. I fell in love with the art and I look up stuff and I ask questions. And, you know, just like you, E.T., you know, you like jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And when it comes, and it's great, but I didn't worry about it in between.
Right. And Aaron's a brown belt version of Aaron.
Exactly. Which is the highest brown belt level you can get. So, yeah. It's very high.
That's funny. Yeah.
I'm leaving now. I quit the school and the podcast.
But what do you see? What do you need? Is it like an analytical mind?
No, I agree. That was one of the first things I was going to say, too, is like when I was, you know, coming up before I got my black belt, honestly, I just got excited about training.
Yeah.
I always stayed excited about training and learning. And, of course, you know, catching people that you know, used to catch you or having a good class is great. But I just never really worried about, you know, it's kind of, I think, an unspoken, like, taboo to, like, ever ask for, hey, when am I going to get my belt in jiu-jitsu?
Oh, yeah.
Which is awesome because another martial archer getting a new belt, like, every month, you know?
Yeah.
But you just got to, like, enjoy training and improvement and not worry about the belt. The belt will come as the improvements happen. But you do have to be mentally tough, man, and I think you got to be humble. You can't get frustrated. You know, you've seen people that take it really personally when they get tapped and they get angry and they hit the mat and they storm off the mat and then they calm down and they come back out.
Regular training, yes.
Yeah, in regular training, you know. And so you got to look at the defeat aspect of it as just a part of the training, you know. Yeah. And that gets better as you train longer. That's why I think I always tell people if you can make it past the first 6 months to a year of training in jiu-jitsu where most of your time is spent getting your butt kicked and, you know, tapping out, and then you'll be fine, you know?
Yeah, blue belt gets so much better when you start actually putting that together at that level, you know? Just keep going. Push past that, you know, early stages.
And, too, you know, my mindset, we had an open mat, you know, where there were some promotions where I got promoted. And that Monday after, whether I got promoted or not, I was in jiu-jitsu class. It didn't matter. You know, I was still doing the same thing Monday, going to jiu-jitsu. Actually, I didn't go Monday, I went Tuesday. I was still going,
there you go, Aaron. Very telling.
I think I took 2 weeks off.
You took 2 weeks off.
I took 2 weeks off. But I think you just got to love jiu-jitsu and love training.
Yep.
Yeah. And it'll come.
But you do have to have, you know, that mental fortitude of, like, wanting to just train hard and gut out tough positions. I mean, you've got to have kind of like a competitor's mindset too, a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, there's a different aspect there once you start getting into the whole deal of like competing against other high level folks and you know, the mental game there.
Yeah, it's got to be a mental component because if you watch top level chess guys, you can see them break just playing chess. You can see them, you know, you can see the anguish in their eyes. And that's, you know, you're not getting crushed on a mat there. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be a mental component. This is chess on the mat, basically, right?
I mean,
so how do you develop that? I mean, is it just time?
Yeah, I think it comes with time and practice just like anything else. I mean, you know, you hear people talk about all the techniques they use, like the sports psych stuff, you know, the mental rehearsal and visualization and, you know, all those things come into play.
Yeah.
Like planning out, running through your mind, like what you want to do and... you know, I think a big thing too is like not worrying about your opponent and what they're going to do to you. You have to stick to what your game plan is and what you're going to do to them. You know, some people, man, I've talked to, they go into it with a step-by-step game plan. This is what I want to do. These are the techniques I'm going after. This is, and then you get other guys, you know, I think more high level guys kind of come out with the mindset of like, I'm just going to let the match unfold as it happens.
Would you say flow with the go? Would you say flow with the go?
Hickson's already coined that phrase, and I don't want to do that for infringe on his comment.
We have some shirts made up, flow with the go, from Chris Mayer.
Yeah, from Chris Mayer. You just have to put in the time and effort. What do you like to do, Chris? Do you have a game plan when you go out and compete, or do you just deal to come?
I do... mentally rehearse stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But I just like to just try to stay positive before the match, stay relaxed, not get overly anxious. Mm-hmm. I just really focus on kind of like staying calm and relaxed, just like it's another day on the mat kind of mindset.
Right.
And let the match unfold, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I might sometimes go out there with, okay, to start the match off, this is what I would like to do.
Right.
Like, I want to shoot for a single or a double, or I want to go for the takedown,
exactly,
or am I going to pull guard, or what's the strategy? You know, am I spend a minute seeing what this guy is going to do? But, man, it's just, you know, once you've been competing for a while and you've been training for a really long time, it is just like another, it's a more intense, much more intense day on the mats at your academy. You know what I mean? Yeah. So there's not that much difference.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, you might have this, like, step A, step B, step C thing, and then somebody, that guy's not going to just go with your plan. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to just adjust in the heat of the moment and do what, you know, comes naturally to you.
Right.
But, yeah. When I was first coming along, I used to get a little more nervous, really nervous and anxious, and I'd be like, oh, crap, I'm about to roll with Mike Fowler,
yeah,
that kind of stuff. But
how big were these tournaments back then?
You mean like Grappler's Quest? Yeah, and they were pretty big,
big.
But the thing was, we used to, I used to drive from Richmond on a Friday night, leave at 5:30, get to New Jersey at like 11:30, compete all day Saturday the next day, and then drive home Sunday morning, kind of stuff. Because you know now it's great because there are a lot more options, but
yeah.
Those were the big ones, you know, and you would drive and you'd go every quarter, like every 6 months or something like that.
I think they've actually gotten smaller, the local ones, the you know, the Grappler's Quest and, you know, Naga and stuff like that.
Well, there's so many options.
Yeah, now. Just from the time I've been training, I remember when there was a Grappler's Quest or a Naga, man, that thing was packed. And now, I mean, there's still,
people clear the schedule for that.
But you know, not I think they were bigger when I was first
sometimes
started.
You'll have like three or four tournaments in the same weekend.
Oh, yeah.
All across the Southeast or the, you know, the East Coast.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, in Virginia, there's been tournaments. And there's two in Virginia and one in North Carolina.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So, or even in West Virginia, you know, we've had that also, I've noticed, you know.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot more options and they're getting smaller, in my opinion. But it's just, you know, looking at the Virginia scene.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Well, what do you, we talked about this the last time Aaron and I recorded, what are you working on now? What are you looking at and trying to improve on when you roll? Is there certain positions or a certain submission? What are you working on?
Yeah, you know, I'm always working like on guard passing, like, you know, really aggressive, like guard passing from the top, but I've been working half guard a lot.
Yeah.
You know, just trying to come up with new options and new transitions to the half guard.
Yeah.
For a little while now. Yeah.
Hmm.
You know, keep it real like Gordo.
He keeps it real. He keeps it real, too.
No, but, you know, I just like playing the half guard game. I think it's good for me being a smaller guy.
Yeah.
And there's lots of tricks and lots of sweeps and reversals from there. So I like to use that as like a safety position, reverse, and then pass.
Right.
And then try to go for sub, you know.
So, yeah.
And that's kind of what I've been working on.
Yeah. When you you say you're a smaller guy, I don't know. when you started out, were you with a lot of the bigger dudes? I mean, were you?
Well, I mean, I'm a short guy, you know. Like,
I know.
Like 5'6"
Everybody has seen
like that. Yes. You know, and I weigh 164 pounds. But, you know, we've got guys that we're rolling with that are 190s, 215, 6'4", 5'10", 5'11", you know, so.
But back then, who was training? What was the typical attitude towards training? I'm sure there's a lot of guys watching the UFC. Because if you look at the UFC back then and the people who were getting exposed to jiu-jitsu, they were kind of a certain element. Watch some early UFC videos.
Yeah,
there was a certain element of people that seems like, in my mind, they would be the ones that would, you know, go to jiu-jitsu. I mean, were you up against a lot of just the big muscle-bound guys?
Yeah, just like every...
Yeah?
Yeah, you know. I mean, like I've told you guys before, there have been times where people would just come in and say, I want to give it a try without even taking one jiu-jitsu class. Like, oh, I used to be a collegiate wrestler, and take your shoes off and your shirt and you go out on the mat with just your jeans on and, you know, have to prove to this, you know, this guy comes at you like that and you have to prove that, you know, jiu-jitsu works. Yeah, there was a lot of that stuff going on back then. But, I mean, there was always all different sizes and types of people.
Okay.
Big bodybuilders and big, you know, ex-wrestlers and ex-football players and,
yeah,
I mean, just same way it is now. We still get that. You know,
we still
just
do.
Not as people are a little more educated about what they're getting into, you know.
Right
now, I think.
Yeah, one of my favorite videos is the Pedro Sauer versus the was it Mr. Minnesota?
Utah.
Mr. Utah.
Yeah,
love that video of him.
That's a pretty funny video. Yeah,
yeah,
it's good. Yeah, Pedro was really small compared to that. What was it, 250 versus 150? There's a 100-pound difference.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a funny video.
And if you watch that, it's almost like they didn't expect Pedro to win that.
Oh,
you
no.
Know?
No. So. Yeah.
You've seen that, you know, inside the school too, as I'm sure everybody has. But yeah, you get those big bodybuilder guys in, and
yeah,
they turn purple all over. They can't get oxygen to their muscles, and they can't breathe. And it's, yeah, it's pretty useless. It
takes a special breed of those guys.
That's what's great about jiu-jitsu. There's no other martial art, really, honestly, that where, you know, someone of my size could deal with someone that much bigger. That even if they hadn't trained in martial arts, but they just, you know, could bench 450 and, you know, they were built like a tank, they would probably win if I didn't know jiu-jitsu, but I knew some other martial art. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really believe that. That's the beauty of this stuff.
Right, right.
It, you know, definitely gives you a sense of security.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. It's, being a smaller guy, I kind of got into it at school. I had a lot of big guys in it, and, you know, it's given me a chance. And, yeah, I've never trained another martial art, but I doubt it. Yeah, the ground takes away all that.
Yeah.
So it's very helpful. So. Well, as we typically do, E.T., what products do you have that you've had a chance to look at and that you like, or are you looking forward to, even if you haven't had a chance to review any of the things that you've gotten recently?
I haven't really had a chance to review too much of anything. We posted on the website the BJJ Legends magazine. This issue is very good.
Yeah, it's a great edition of that. Some good stuff in there.
Right.
I've even been working on some things that I've seen in it with the DVD also. So, and yeah, it's a good one.
Oh yeah, we'll have to see if you got your bag of tricks.
I just ordered Roy Dean's brown belt requirements.
Yeah.
I love all of his blue belt, his purple belt, his brown belt. Even from a black belt, he puts out a blue belt requirements part two. I'll get it because his DVDs are so well produced. And they're so, you know, they're very good. Very good,
you know, DVDs. I haven't seen any. I don't have any of his DVDs, and I haven't seen any. I probably will order the brown belt requirements or borrow it from you.
Okay.
But yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about that one.
Yeah,
and all his past stuff.
Right. Roy Harris and Roy Dean, they put out very good quality.
Do they?
Products. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have any of the stuff, but I'll probably at least take a look at yours.
Yeah. What about you? What are you looking at?
You know, I received Hodger's documentary. What's the title of that?
Grapple.
Which, I, in my opinion, as far as the DVD documentaries go, is the best one that's come out since Henzo.
Right.
Documentary. It's really good. It's not too long. It kind of just, you know, follows him along with some competition and talks to his mom about his early career. And it's really well done. It's really interesting. I like at the end also there's some tournament footage with some commentary, kind of what he's thinking about, what he's doing. So I thought it was really well done.
What's the period he filmed this? I know he was leading up to a competition in this.
2011.
Okay, so it was, what was it, the Worlds, the Mundials?
Pan Ams? Yeah, which one's at the pyramid?
Worlds.
The Worlds.
Yeah.
The Worlds, yeah, it was 2011.
Okay.
Let me tell you, if you ever get to go to that, that's awesome. Just that pyramid, just the venue for a jiu-jitsu tournament, it's crazy, man.
Really?
Yeah, it really is. It's really cool. You walk into this huge glass pyramid up these stairs going into the front, and it's just, you look down into the bottom, the base of this place, and it's just like...
Where's it held?
10 mats. It's in California.
Yeah?
Yeah, like outside of L.A.
Hmm.
But it's just, you know it's like the world when you get there. It's cool.
Yeah. And it looks like a cool. I mean, a pyramid. Yeah. It's in a pyramid. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, there's not many of those. Maybe one other in Las Vegas or something. So
yeah.
It's definitely.
There's a few in Egypt.
Are there?
I don't know.
They're not glass, though.
Well, these are made by humans. The ones in Egypt. That's
aliens.
It's debatable.
Aliens. No. Aliens.
Another podcast.
Other than that, Stuart Cooper.
Yeah.
Man, he's putting out some good stuff for free
right, on
his website. It's definitely check out. We've talked about it before.
Yeah.
But what's the new... You sent me a link to one.
Oh, man. Why am I blanking? He did... Mario Spear.
Mario Spear.
Oh, that... Yeah,
Mario Spear has one documentary called Day of Zen. And that's really good. I like watching that. Yeah. That's old school MMA, Valley Tudo. Yeah. Jiu-Jitsu, and now there's another one Stewart is putting out.
Yeah, he does some good stuff. He's going to do a Kira also, which looks pretty good.
So. Are they going to be free online, or are they going to be DVDs?
I think he's doing it all free.
Cool.
It's all free.
Yeah, that looks really good.
Yeah, I mean, they're long. I mean, they got some length to them. They're not 5-minute videos. You know, they're 20-minute videos.
Is he the same guy that put up the Hops and More thing that you guys posted? Or is that someone different?
I think that's somebody different.
That's somebody different. Okay. I forget what brand is putting that out. Manto, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Funded that. Yeah.
Sponsored that. That's another good one. So.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? Have you bought anything lately?
Yes, I have.
Well, talk about it.
It's just another gi.
Okay.
I don't have it yet, but I'll give you guys the thumbs up or thumbs down, or just not necessarily thumbs down, but my opinion. When I get it.
Yeah, we'll be honest.
It's a, what's it called? X-Guard brand?
Yeah.
Kamikaze kimono.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for that to come in. Hopefully that'll be in soon.
What color did you get?
The white. White and red. White. Yeah. Back to white.
Right.
So, yeah, I just, all my gis are torn and mismatched now, and, you know, really ragged, so I'm trying to get some new gis. You know what, I'm psyched because it's cotton pants.
Yeah.
And I really don't like ripstop pants.
You run through ripstop pants.
I don't know what it is, man, but every pair of ripstop pants I have rip. And they don't rip in the material, they rip down the seams.
Right.
So somebody's got to do something about that.
Well,
that's funny. I have a couple.
Here's when they rip. If they slide down your hips a little bit, after rolling, and you don't realize it, and you squat down to like pass the guard or something like that, they split, man.
So
right along the seam. So
you're trying not to buy any more of those.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. That's why I like that tatami gi.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was like still lightweight, but it's canvas or cotton.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these are the same way. They're like an 8-ounce or 10-ounce canvas pant, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you. You bought some Roots of Fight shirts. What do you think?
I liked them a lot, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, but the old school Academy of Jiu-Jitsu, Gracie Roots of Fight
shirt. They look very thin. Are they thin?
No, I think they're American Apparel, so they're like that athletic cut. Like,
okay.
Really light. Yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
Really nice, yeah.
You got to get those when they're in stock, because those shirts sell out pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty fast.
Yeah, they're cool. They're good quality shirts. I like mine a lot.
So. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, that's what we got today.
Yeah, I think that's it. So, guys, we've got some interesting interviews coming up. Some good outside jiu-jitsu topics related, of course, and then some high level competitors in the next 2 months. So,
looking
out for those. We'll have them posted as soon as we can get the interviews in. So,
if you have any comments or suggestions, jiu-jitsugeeks@gmail.com. Give us an email or visit the blog. I'm sure that's how you found this, unless you got off the Facebook page. We are jiu-jitsugeeks.com. Until next time.
Thanks, guys.
And me too.
Aaron.
Chris.